Welcome to the Tech Vittori podcast, where we will explore the hottest topics in connectivity and digitalization with some of the industry's leading minds. So we will begin with AI race, policies for adoption in Europe. Our moderator will be director and head of Europe and UK at Access Partnership, Simona Lipstaite. Welcome, Simona, and good luck.
Thank you.
Come on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and welcome everyone to this very important and all-encompassing topic and discussion on the topic, AI race policies for adoption in Europe. It's a topic that could fill not just one conference, but many conferences, but we will try to humbly, or perhaps really ambitiously, cover this in 50 minutes. So audience, as our MC said, please also don't be shy. I know we're in the Baltics, Nordics, but I always try to encourage discussion either in the room or online. So if you have questions or comments, don't hesitate to raise your hand or do it through the online system as well. We have lots to unpack in today's session, and I'm really happy that we have a really diverse panel of different industry representatives, governments, different regional perspectives as well. So hopefully it'll be a good discussion. Just to quickly say, at Access Partnership, we work with, well, we are a technology and digital policy consultancy, and we, by definition, work with a lot of technology and digital companies and governments, some in this room and some not in this room. At the moment, everyone's planning 2025. We're asking our clients, you know, what will be your priority? Almost all of them have said AI. Some of them it's AI, like 98%. Everything else is maybe falls into place because they are either AI developers or they use it extensively. For others, even if it's not their mainstream of work right now, everyone's keeping an eye on it so as not to miss out on either a potential to participate, but also there are lots of potential risks in the regulation and upcoming policies that they would need to mitigate right now. So AI is everywhere, and I hope we will capture this today in the discussion as well. The discussion today is where Europe is in terms of AI legislation, implementation, and development, although I think we'll focus a bit more on policy mostly, and how companies will be getting involved in the process. And what recommendations can we all put together as a panel and maybe even as a group in the room for policymakers in Europe to take it forward? I will introduce the panel briefly, but it would also be good in your opening statements if you talked maybe even one, two sentences about what it is that you do, because I'm sure everyone wants to learn a little bit more about this. So we have in this order Mr. Juris Binde, who is the president and CEO of LMT, the Latvian mobile telephone, and thank you for hosting us in lovely Riga, which is, I think, is my fifth time now, and I always love it coming back. We have Benjamin Bracke, who is the head of the new Digital and Data Policy Directorate General at the German Federal Ministry for Digital and Transport. And you heard him this morning in the keynote speech. I think there's lots to unpack there, and we can take some into the discussion here. We have Alexandre Roure, who serves as the head of policy and deputy head of office at the Brussels branch of the Computer and Communications Industry Association, the CCIA. And we have Juliana Koza, who is the director for government affairs at Qualcomm, so an interesting industry perspective here. And she focuses a lot on AI, but also cybersecurity, automotive, and other topics. So I will delve into opening statements very shortly, but first I did want to mention just one major EU policy development. You may have, I mean, I'm sure the panel has seen, but you may have seen in the audience that we have an indication of what the next 5 years will look like for the European Commission's working program. So Ms. Hanna Virkkunen, who is the proposed new executive vice president for the European Commission responsible for tax sovereignty, security, and democracy, has laid out what she would like to achieve in the next 5 years if she is confirmed by the European Parliament in the coming weeks. And I'd like to focus on three initiatives she has mentioned. One is the AI Factories initiative, which is quite groundbreaking for the EU. She'd like to create conditions for more AI startups and SMEs and the broader ecosystem to develop large European AI models, which we currently don't really have or have very, the development is a very unconnected way. And she wants to launch at least 5 AI factories in Europe within the first 100 days of the commission, extremely ambitious. The second one is the Cloud and AI Development Act. So for the first time, the EU would be putting together cloud, which has been around for a number of years, and you have different units and different policies dealing with it, but also putting it together with AI into one legislative initiative to boost companies and, I guess, get rid of the conditions that prevent them from developing and deploying AI. So I'd love to hear the panel's views about this. And also an apply AI strategy, which is meant to be a very practical, rapid deployment of AI solutions on leading industrial sectors. So health, energy, robotics, manufacturing, space, defense, and the public sector. So panel, either in your opening statements or maybe a little bit afterwards, we can come back to these questions. But what do you think about this menu of new AI policies that we will all have to deal with for the next 5 years? Does it suit your priorities? You know, what other policies could you suggest? So if you could stay within 4 to 5 minutes for the opening session, that would be great. And we will go in this order with Juris going first.
Okay, thank you, Simona. Good morning, everybody. So, of course, politically, these initiatives are very interesting, very important. However, we have to start with the subject. What is the subject is expected to be regulated? And sometimes it's a feeling that for politicians it's not very much clear. Can you see the first slide, please, somewhere? You can see. Perfect. So the artificial intelligence, in fact, it's a complex issue, which is a significant part of the fourth industrial revolution, or so-called Industry 4.0. And like all previous industrial revolutions, it became possible due to different discoveries and of science and technologies. The first industrial revolution get possible to change heat energy to mechanical energy. The second key driver for the second industry was electricity. For the third, it was computing technique and microelectronics. And for the fourth, it's higher level computing, quantum electronics, quantum computing, wireless communications, and so on. And as all other main tasks of the revolutions was to make people free from the so-called 3 Ds, dirty, dull, dangerous jobs. Now on the top of that is becoming also a complexity. And the influence of the artificial intelligence as one of the elements of the Industry 4.0 is important in two main areas. The first area is industrial, which is more or less clear. It's used for analysis, for the controlling and managing the different technological processes and transport monitoring systems and so on. And this regulation is, let's say, relatively a little bit necessary, not very much. Another important issue is the social part. As the social part can be very useful for the many people, at the same time, the bad guys can use the artificial intelligence for the bad purposes, for the manipulating with the society, with manipulating with the results of elections and so on, provoking conflicts and so on. So this is a part which is very important to look at and to regulate. But at the same time, there must be some balance between the positive issues we can achieve and also the controlling and personal GDPR issues and so on. And say it's hard for politicians to decide about the regulations if they don't know what does it mean and what to regulate. And I would like to look a little bit in the past, some 30 years ago, when the GSM Association was established, and there were sitting at the same table telco operators, manufacturers of the telecommunication equipment, and regulators, the representatives of the state administrations. And in this composition of the members, it was achieved very, very good result because the GSM, which initially was planned as a pan-European system, very fast acquired all the world. And the regulators did the job which was necessary for the industry and what was necessary for the society. They were regulating very few issues. Frequencies, frequency allocation, interconnection on and roaming, and standardization or recognition of the end user's equipment standards. Just three things. Later on, the European Union started to regulate everything what they can imagine. And as a result, today, Europe is not a leading area in the world. So maybe if Europe want to become great again, then most probably is necessary to create again some ecosystems where the manufacturers, operators and society are working together to develop the best possible framework for the future.
Already a good first recommendation. We need a better ecosystem and we need to be working to put that together. Regulation is regulation, but the facts are facts. But Benjamin, what is your take on this?
Yes, thank you very much. I try to keep it rather short. So I like what you said, that regulators should have a clear view on the subject they're actually planning to regulate. Throughout the last years, I can't say decades, because the whole regulation around data only started with the GDPR and that came into effect in 2018. So that is also something to reckon. The whole regulatory landscape we have in place is younger than 10 years. So, and during those, in this period, we focused very much on things that we don't want to see. We focused on, we don't want to have unfair competition. We don't want to have large companies misusing their power on one market to become a dominant leader already on the on another market. We said that we want platforms to be accountable for X, Y, Z. But we don't have a clear vision what we in Europe would really like to achieve. Because it is not necessarily the contrary to what I described that is our desire to achieve. So we need to have a clear vision. And I think this is something which should be of importance to the next commission, to think about how to bring Europe ahead. And it is not necessarily to say that Europe should become the most competitive area in the world. I briefly mentioned in my opening remarks that I did an internship in Tallinn. That was back in 2002. That was a time where Estonia and the Baltic states have not been part of the European Union. But there was already alignment in process. And there was a program, the so-called Lisbon process. And that was already, in 2002, designed to make Europe the most competitive area in the world. So we're talking always about competitiveness. But what is the subject of competitiveness? I think it's the backbone of the European economy. That's not huge companies, that's small and medium-sized companies. And when you talk about regulation, what we utmost need at this moment in time is guidance for small and medium-sized companies as to how to implement the whole regulatory landscape, beginning with the Data Act and not ending with the AI, Act. What we don't need is additional regulatory burden. What we don't need is any program to set up by state intervention champions and new mechanisms. We need to break it down. We have a regulatory landscape. How should small and medium-sized companies implement this in order to stay ahead of the curve?
Thank you. And I would love to come back to this in the later discussion because, I mean, you're right, SMEs will be key, but how do we provide this guidance and how do we support them is a topic I'd love to come back to. Alexandre, please.
Thank you very much. Benjamin, I loved what you said here. You kind of stole one of my talking points, but that's great because that makes my talking points even shorter. At CCA, just a full disclaimer, we represent largely, actually exclusively pure digital players. It's great to have this conversation around the take-up of AI because, as you pointed out, Benjamin, I think over the last 5 years, I'm based in Brussels. A lot of the conversations in Brussels is very much been about how do we ensure trust about the use of AI and how do we increase, how do we make sure that AI is deployed safely. It's really defensive tools that we're talking about and hardly offensive competitive tools, or by tools I mean policies, right? The one thing that I've seen in the last 5 years that I think was quite helpful, and actually, Benjamin, to your point, I think we have seen some concrete targets about where we want to be on AI adoption. The governments of Germany, Latvia, and all other 25 governments, plus the European Commission, the Parliament, have agreed collectively that we should have 3 out of 4 companies on this continent adopting AI. And by adopting, I don't just mean being a customer, but also deploying it using third-party LLM, putting that into your system, maybe use that as a feature of your own products, existing products. So being an active part of AI adoption. And 3 out of 4 companies, I mean, if you crunch the number, that's, first of all, that's 26 million enterprises that need to adopt AI. In 2024, according to the European Commission stats, we only have 2 million enterprises adopting AI. And that's okay, because really the popularization of AI really started, you look at a generative AI, it's really end of 2022. But it's an adoption rate of around 1 million companies every year over the last 2 years. We need to have to turn this adoption rate fivefold, right, to get to these 2030 targets. If you look at the regulatory landscape, what have we done and what will we be doing to get there? Benjamin, you talked about the regulatory landscape. I can count, I think, at least 8 pieces of legislation on top of the AI Act that regulates AI technology. Data protection, consumer protection, content moderation, you mentioned competition, data, privacy. I could go on. And I think for all of this legislation, you also have different regulators being involved. As we flesh out those relatively new laws, I think it's important that we keep, that regulatory agencies keep a continuous dialogue with industry. Some regulators have done historically a better job at having that dialogue with industry, and kudos, to be honest, with the telecom community, the telecom regulatory authority, and I think they can maybe, they're really leading by example on many fronts, and I think a lot of authorities, for example, in the data protection space, could learn, I think, respectfully, a few things or two from telecom authorities. I think also that, in order to sort of disentangle this regulatory spaghetti, looming regulatory spaghetti here, we're going to need to have regulatory agency to talk to one another. In the next 5 years, is there a way here, a low-hanging fruit, to formalize some sort of cooperation between those regulatory agencies? So the bottom line is, if we want to take, if we want more companies, especially the small and medium-sized enterprises, which constitute 90%, over 90% of our companies in Europe, if we want them to adopt AI, we need to keep it simple. We also need to make sure that AI remains affordable. And the European Commission has been entertaining policies that would effectively, artificially, rocket up the price of AI technologies indirectly. You've all heard of the Fair Share campaign, I'm sure, and that is the talks in Brussels are, there are clear numbers of around 20 billion euros per year of payouts from digital players over to telecom providers. Now, as you all know, in order to maintain, to train AI and to maintain AI, you need huge computing capacity. And that is done on the cloud. And when we are seeing things like we need some sort of fair share or arbitration mechanism or things like that, this is cost that the cost of doing business, or here in this case, cloud business or AI business, will be passed on to customers. And at the end of the day, customers, especially for governments, but also SMEs, that are sort of cost sensitive, the most cost sensitive to anything that they are procuring, money talks, right? So I think that's important. And maybe the last point, we need to keep AI running. And here, this is probably in a discussion geared towards energy supply and our electricity grids. I think Goldman Sachs reported a few months back that given the current adoption rate of AI, in the next 10 years or so, we would need 800 billion investments, and I believe this will be a mix of, or this should be, I think, a mix of both public and private investments into the electricity, renewing our old electricity grids in most of Europe, but also another 800 billion euros that needs to be fed into new sources of electricity. It has to be green It has to be green sources of technologies, right, going forward. So these are the three things: keep it simple, keep it affordable, and keep AI running.
Good summary, and I like the focus on concrete recommendations on just how much money and how much investment we need for this to happen. Because as you say, everyone keeps talking about how we must attract more AI, how we make Europe the AI continent. But here are some concrete suggestions on how to make this happen. Juliana, what is your take on the policy angle, the industrial perspective as well?
First of all, I would like to thank you to be on this panel today. Last year, I already joined the conference, and it was fantastic. So I would like to bring you a bit more the industry perspective to the discussion, going a bit away from the regulatory aspects, and you will understand in a couple of minutes why I'm focusing on the product side in the next couple of minutes. So Qualcomm is a developer for wireless technologies, and we've started to invest in AI over 15 years ago. We had our yearly Snapdragon Summit a couple of days ago, and that's why I would like to bring to you really the newest innovation, which we would love to see on the market. So when we talk about AI, et cetera, we are seeing that AI will transform all industries. We are talking about mobile, IoT, automotive, et cetera. And it will also transform our daily lives. And Qualcomm's goal, in fact, and this is very, very interesting, is that we want to bring AI directly to the edge, to the user's device, enabling devices to process data and make intelligence decisions in real time. The concept of on-device AI is groundbreaking in artificial intelligence, and it's not only because of the data part, it's also because of the performance by reducing latency, but also ensures greater privacy and security on the device. And I would love to give you just one example, which we showcased at GITEX, I think it was 2 weeks ago. When we talk about on-device AI, and we already talked about large language models briefly, so the new point is that with on-device AI, you don't need the connectivity part anymore. So imagine you have your cell phone, and this is what we showcased. You have your cell phone, you put it into airplane mode, you have your large language model running on your device, and you will be able to ask specific questions and receive the answers in real time. So you are flying to Riga, wants to have like sightseeing hotspots, so you ask it and you will receive the full list. This is huge. I mean, this is massive. If you do not need the connectivity part anymore for this specific case. And we are sure that smart devices will change in the next 3 years. And we assume that in the next 3 years, 4 years, you will have your mobile phone. For example, you want to transfer your money, and nowadays you use an app to transfer it, etc. But in the future, you will have, for example, an AI agent, which will do the job, in fact. So it will replace, actually, the different apps. And then you say to this agent, OK, tomorrow, please transfer 10 euros to Simona's banking account. And this will work out. I think that those use cases or special models are very interesting for not only for the industries, because I assume you have seen our latest announcements with Honeywell in the energy sector, as well as with Aramco. But it's like part of our daily lives as well, and it will change it. I think this was a summary, really, of what is possible from the industry perspective. And coming back to the not perhaps the regulatory part when it comes to the SMEs, probably. So we at Qualcomm, we developed the Qualcomm AI Hub. It's a developer platform for everyone. So a private person can optimize or work on a special, for example, large language model, bringing the model to our hub, can do everything, will receive Qualcomm-enabled devices, and afterwards you can do with the model whatever you want. And I think this is one interesting fact, because we support developers as well as research institutes to boost innovation and to have like us as a company doing our part to have an open ecosystem in this field as well.
Thank you. Thank you for the overview as well. I like it. What is possible? I'm sure we'll come back to this question next year and the year after and the year after. As I think Benjamin mentioned in the opening speech, you know, what seemed impossible even several decades ago, or magic, is now reality. So good to hear that. So SME angle, open ecosystem, good segue into that. We all agree that SMEs in Europe will be essential in getting us to the ambitions, to where Europe wants to be in terms of ambitions on AI. We also heard about the complex array of legislation that these SMEs even today have to navigate. I mean, we look at the AI Act, but then Alex mentioned a good handful of other pieces of legislation. What is Germany doing to support SMEs? You mentioned additional guidance and additional kind of going deeper than the AI Act.
Yes, thank you very much. It's quite funny. I have an industrial background. I worked 10 years for IBM. And from that time, I always got the impression that the industry doesn't want any regulation or guidance. However, I learned that this is not true. Because when we look at the AI Act, there are very clear provisions for high-risk AI. It's laid down what you need to do when you have a high-risk AI. But we all agree that the bulk of AI services and products we will see will be beneath the high risk. And there, the guidance is not that clear. There's talks about transparency, about accountability. But imagine you are an entrepreneur, a CEO of a small or medium-sized company, and you would not like to work on a large language model, but you would just like to foster or strengthen your existing products and services with AI. What's transparency? What's accountability? And that's where politics needs to play a role. Not in so far that we gave the guidance. We don't want any political guidance. But we in Germany, under the umbrella of a project called Mission AI, we bring together certification organizations like the TÜV or the DEKRA. We bring together certifications organizations already working on AI, like Certify AI, but also industry. And they are working on concrete showcases, on concrete use cases, as to how to develop guidelines, technological standards, so that the industry feels comfortable to put products into the markets that are safe and secure. If in the end we will also issue a label, that is still up to discussion. But we need to work jointly with the certification organizations in order that not each and every certification organization is working on its own certification scheme, because that will not really help small and medium-sized companies to grow, especially with AI. So this is what we're doing in Germany. And on top of that, I think you mentioned that AI will have a tremendous demand for energy and a tremendous demand for computing capacity. So data centers will be shifted more into political attention. And this is what the government is also doing, trying to work on specific programs to provide computing power and data center capacities to the private sector.
Thank you for that. Really practical examples, I think. And I don't know if you have a sense if other countries are also heading in the same direction. Is Germany paving the way, or do you see maybe clusters of potential cooperation in some of the other countries that are subject to the EU AI Act? Or is it for the moment quite nascent?
No, it is. I mean, we start this, but I mentioned also our Innovation Club we have with the Baltic countries. They are invited. When I talk at international conference, we get very positive feedback, and there's a lot of interest around Mission AI. So we don't want to create an insulated solution. No one will, how to say, use products that are only certified for a German market or so. And this brings me to the partnership aspect. We need to work in partnerships. The supply market and the suppliers and the market we are targeting with AI, it's not bound to Germany, it's not bound to Europe, it's globally. And that's the reason why we need to focus on internationally approved standards when we talk about safe and secure AI.
Makes sense. Juris, what is your take on how the government could and should be helping AI innovation? And by government, I could mean national governments, but also, you know, the European legislators and the European policymakers.
Well, I think that there must be separated two parts. There is a technical part, which so far in different industries is defined by the industrial standards. They are based on the technical issues. For instance, in the opening session, Carlos Bogens was talking about the ITU role as a big framework for all the frequencies and telco regulations on the global level. And these are mainly technical issues which are putting some framework for all the countries around the world. Because the satellite frequencies are for everybody, binding and so on. Another part is this social-political regulation. And again, so far it's always practice to define what not to do. But in fact, the approach should be that you are allowed to do everything except things are unpolite, dangerous, and so on. By the way, these are quite old principles, which were mentioned also in the Erich Kästner's book about Emil and his friends. And one of these boys was had the rules from his father that you can do everything except these few things. And this is okay. We are assuming that in general our society consists of the smart human beings and not from the something like who needs to be regulated all the time. So it's, to my opinion, it's time more to rely on the people's brain, not so much on external regulations.
Mm. Interesting point. Gilane, did you want to come in on that?
I would like to add something to what Mr. Bracha mentioned. So I think we are aligned when we say you need to be part of the AI game or you are left behind. And I think this is something we can say, or which applies for the industry, but for the governments as well. So I fully agree about the international cooperation, because we need to think outside the box. It's not only Germany, it's not only France, it's not only Italy or Europe. It's like international cooperation. When we look into the AI landscape globally, we are seeing, for example, that Brazil launched an AI action plan, which is quite in line with the European efforts as well. And I mean, learning from each other is part of it, and discussions are important. And it starts with having discussions with research institutes, with SMEs, and then it goes up to industries and really different countries. So I fully agree with what you said before.
At this stage, I want to check if there are any questions or comments from the audience or indeed online.
Yes, yes, there is. There are some comments on AI. Also on our chat, and the questions are coming in. Oh, you also can join in, please. Join the platform. It's live, 5gtechcrew.com, and you can ask questions there. And we are having some questions, so you can decide, is it fitting your discussion right now? And some questions are like this. So we are mainly thinking of AI as an over-the-top application, like generative AI. Are there different policies regarded for embedded AI versus over-the-top AI, especially as we move towards artificial general intelligence and towards embedding AI into 6G signaling and networks operated by AI? Are we going so far?
That is a very interesting but very technical question as well. And I'm wondering, Alex, maybe you wanted to comment on the different, well, whether there should be, well, not whether, but how the nuance of regulation should reflect the different types of the AI technologies as well, and maybe tying it to the broader ecosystem as well.
Yeah, thank you. I think when it comes to this question, policies and laws that are relevant for AI, the kind of AI technology that is embedded into existing products and to augment the quality of those products. I think, if you look at, without getting too legalese or too nerdy on the policy front here, but the AI Act or the data protection regulation, for one, those companies that will be deploying AI in such a way will carry a fair amount of responsibility. To a certain extent, some of them will be classified as deployer of AI, and that carries a responsibility similar to the larger companies that are deploying generative AI models. I think in the next 10 years or so, from an industry's perspective, we think, of course, we have some very popular generative AI applications, but we would expect, I think, the market inherently will diversify more, and rather than having horizontal type products that we are seeing today, we're going to get, more likely than not, I don't have a crystal ball, but usually this is when you look at other technology, that's usually how it goes, you will start seeing more and more verticals, right? Specialized LLMs, specialized generative AI products for specific industries, for for governments that are tailored to their needs. And each of those actors that will be deploying those vertical AI will be, and we hope many of them will come from Europe, to be honest, and each of them will carry some form of responsibility under various rules that we already have today. The question is, do we need to add more rules? And just to, for, you may already be aware here in the room or online, but we have, for example, civil liability rules, new ones, applicable to software and AI systems, broadly speaking. That's called the Product Liability Directive. Now there's a question whether we should add on top of that an AI Liability Directive, mm-hmm. even though AI is already covered in the Product Liability Directive. There's a proposal on the table, and we would hope, we, from our point of view, we think that, for example, the former directive, the Product Liability Directive, covers more than enough the kind of damages that can arise out of the use of AI, and frankly speaking, makes it really relatively simple for claimants to actually claim damages from an AI developer. That's actually something probably, it's a piece of legislation, this Product Liability Directive, that's not really talked about, but potentially could have massive implications because, after all, this is a matter of liability. And it's going to be very difficult, as soon as you've caused the damage, to reverse the burden of proof. You are presumed to have caused the damage, even though the claimant didn't have to prove any sort of link between your product and the damage, simply because, you know, it's outside a judge's competence to figure out whether there's actually a causality link between the two.
There's one more question on policy, rather than actually two questions. One is on nuclear power, because we will need much, much more energy. We've been touching green energy also already on opening session, but Philip is asking, so is there a possibility for more nuclear energy plants being constructed and funded to satisfy the goals for AI development?
If anyone would like to take it, please.
I think that's a brilliant question, because, I mean, from Germany, from a German perspective, the decision has been taken in Germany that we don't put our future on nuclear energy. Nevertheless, I already said that there is such a huge demand for power for data centers that the question of prices for energy and the question where are we actually getting cheap energy from, it'll become a geopolitical one. Because there are countries around the world that are, how should I frame it, not necessarily blossoms at the bouquet of democracy, that can provide energy for almost nothing. So the question will be, how transformative will AI and the computing power underneath it, how transformative will be this for geopolitics? And this is something we need to put a lot more focus on when we discuss AI and data center capabilities.
So what is the answer, yes or no?
I don't have an answer yet, honestly. But I think it's one of the subjects we really need to discuss and we need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Just one more. Imans is asking, is it worth this actually noting? It's worth discussing, even in briefly, not how to have safe AI, but also to define what is that is being threatened that we should be guarding against. So employment risks, military risks, artistic risks, each of them are very different from one another. So what exactly we are afraid of or should be guarding against?
Would anyone like, Juris?
So in fact, to say very simply, very shortly, the artificial intelligence is an adaptive computing system with a high power and the self-learning feature. It's very short. And we have to consider all these effects. This system can learn good things, or it can learn bad things, and therefore it's very important what quality of the input information is delivered for this artificial intelligence systems. So in all the data processing is a very well known principle that garbage in, garbage out. So the same even in the even higher level, it's for the artificial intelligence systems. So another issue is the defense or protection this system from the external influence. If you are looking in the nature, the human beings, and not only human but all the live beings' brain is quite strongly protected from outside. And the same must be also for artificial intelligence systems. Mm-hmm. The cybersecurity is nowadays a very hot topic. It was also mentioned in the opening ceremony, opening session, that again, bad guys are using different holes in the systems to influence the society and so on. And here I would like to remind some sentence from the Harry Potter that don't trust the being, the smart being, if you don't know where its brain is located. Mm.
The brain is located.
Yeah. And this is even more important for the artificial intelligence system. But finally, we can create very complicated systems to defend, to protect, and so on. But if we will not have a natural intelligence, the AI will not help us.
So for closing, back to you, Simona.
Thank you. Just coming back to the title of today's panel, AI, well, races for AI and races for adoption of policies in Europe. Very briefly, I would love to hear from the speakers what their one short, 20-second maximum recommendation would be for the new European Commission and European legislators. We are currently in my favorite 5-year cycle where the new European Commission is a clean slate, new agenda, new policy program, so many exciting things and strategies to be working on with clients and companies. But, I summarized a little bit in the beginning what is already on the menu. What is your recommendation? And maybe let's start in this direction, starting with Juliana.
I think that there are different important points. So the first one would be boost for investments. Then the second one would be support global partnerships. And the third one is continuing to engage with the industry, because this is something which the European Commission did over the past years when we talk about the AI Act, and which is still ongoing in different working groups. And we really appreciate that we can be part of it, actually.
Thank you. And I hope we can turn this into a short video that we can send to the policymakers as well. Alex, you're next.
Yeah, I think if the European Commission could behave a little more like a company. And what I mean by that is focus on the demand, focus on your customer, and start your way backward, and the supply will follow. And ultimately, I mean, this, because to be honest, the last 5 years I've actually quite, in my view, focused a little too much on the supply side without any consideration on the demand side, on the usage side. And that, I think, there needs to be a mindset shift here. Just if we want European companies to be more competitive, we need to allow them to be more competitive. And we need the European Commission to set out the framework for that.
Thank you. Benjamin, tricky question for you, but...
Yeah, indeed, a tricky question. So I refer to the paper we issued in the Innovation Club addressing the European Commission on regulatory issues, and I can keep it rather short. Pause and implement.
Thank you. And yours very briefly. Thank you.
So the regulators and the politicians should remember that the regulations must stimulate the economic growth and prosperity of the society and not vice versa.
Thank you so much. I'd love a summary of all of that, if possible, from the organizers. And thank you, everyone, for attending, for listening. I hope it was useful, and looking forward to maybe more AI panels next year. And thank you to our brilliant speakers.
Thank you. And thank you, Simona Lipstadt, for moderating.